All right.
Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, here we go.
And now,
you are listening live.
Handoff, Kennedy McCoy cuts it back inside. He's at five, heading to the end zone. He's in! Touchdown! Drops, throws, has a man. Ball caught Jennings. Gary Jennings breaks the tackle. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5, end zone. Touchdown, Gary Jennings!
All right, by Goddard. Hoping we got it right.
And it is a great night to be a Mountaineer, wherever you may be.
Well, it is a good kick to be out here. Thanks for sticking with us. I hope we're in there. I don't know what's going on exactly. We had some technical difficulties, as happens in a first live show. I don't know. We'll work through it. Hopefully we'll get everybody on as they want to come on. Again, you can call the show live at 917-932-1765. Mike, I think we're good.
I'm alive.
Like I was saying, West Virginia falls to Virginia Tech in the season opener, 31-24. But as much as I was really disappointed when I left the stadium and the day after and yesterday, I'm okay now that I think back at how the team looked, and for the most part we looked all right, in my opinion. I don't know, I feel slightly optimistic about the rest of the season.
Yeah, I'm feeling the same way. I hate losing to Virginia Tech, especially being this close to the school and stuff. And I've heard it from multiple people about how we lost, and I expected that. But moving on to the rest of the season, I feel really, really good about our prospects here. I'm not saying we're going to go and win the Big 12. I'd love to, but it got a little bit easier, I think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's be quite honest. We're not going to face a defense like Tech's defense until Kansas State is probably the best defense we're going to face in the Big 12. TCU maybe has a comparable-ish defense, but I don't really think that there's a defense that compares to what Virginia Tech brought at us. But despite that, look, I don't want to say that the reason we lost was because of special teams, but that had a big part to do with it. And you know, maybe we learn from this now how to adjust to our special teams inadequacies. But at the end of the day, Will Greer still threw for 371 yards, three touchdowns. Justin Crawford ran for 106 yards. So, you know, when you look from that perspective, it's pretty good. Gary Jennings with 169 yards receiving and a touchdown catch. David Sills with a 94 yards and nine catches and two touchdowns. So, you know, the numbers are all right. It's not like we got wiped away, and you know, granted, Virginia Tech did miss two field goals, so you could be looking at a 37-24 win for Virginia Tech. But you know, they didn't, and they missed two field goals, so we were able to capitalize on them. I don't know. I'm hoping that this offense will be able to work a little better against some defenses who aren't as well prepared or as well equipped to handle with what we throw at them. But
yeah,
this is a lot of hope. It's a lot of hope.
Right. There's no one else. Well, I won't say no one else in conference because I don't know. TCU plays defense when they want to. And they're actually known for their defense, or used to be. But I don't think there's going to be anybody that's close to that. Tech has a top 15 defense easily. I mean, it's going to be hard to find it. I don't see any Big 12 team topping their defense, really.
I definitely don't see a Big 12 defense doing what Virginia Tech's defense did. Basically what they did was they dared us to throw deep on them or run on them, and we were successful to a point for both of those. But, you know, they are a good defense, and they were able to ultimately win that battle. And but, hey, Will Greer only was sacked two times, which I know that sounds bad, but we were concerned about the play of our offensive line, and I don't think it was that bad. I think it could be improved. I thought Matt Jones up at the center position could have been a little more consistent, but ultimately we did all right up front, and I thought we handled their defensive pressure all right. It helps that we have a quarterback who is mobile and can scoot around the defense, the defensive linemen, and a lot of the linebackers who they were throwing at us.
Well, there's one person on the offensive line that I want to give a shout out to, and that's Josh Sills, who came in after Lingenfelter got injured. And going back and watching the game on that Pettaway run in the fourth quarter, Josh Sills had a hell of a pancake block. Like, he played awesome for a backup, and I would I'd expect him to get that starting job over Lingenfelter, especially this week, because I'm sure Lingenfelter still, you know, he's day to day. I think it's what Dana said.
Yeah.
But Josh Sills did excellent as a backup.
Well, I mean, Lingenfelter was really, I thought, again, we all did fine, but I think you're right. I mean, we'll see how this goes. If this is an opportunity for the kid to win a starting job, that's, you know, unfortunate for one guy, but, you know, it's an opportunity for another. I still think there's room for improvement across the entire line, but, you know, I didn't expect to be perfect week one anyway. I mean,
right.
How could you? We do want to remind you this is a live call-in show, so please call us. You can call 917-932-1765, and we will answer your calls. Please be civil. You know, remember that there could be kids and children listening, so don't do anything crazy or don't say anything that you wouldn't want them to hear. But we understand there are going to be some frustrations and everything else, and that's what we're here for. We're frustrated. It's not great to lose to Virginia Tech. It's not fun that now we have five more years to have to deal with their crap, basically. We do have a question. You can tweet at Smoking Musket and ask us questions there. We do have one from at Brian DWVU. He asks, when is David Long coming back? And, you know, as far as I've seen, you know, the prognostication is still he's going to be out for all of September. I don't think Dana's updated anything other than that.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything. He was out on the field. He wasn't in a jersey or anything, but he didn't have knee braces on, so it looks like
right.
He might be close. I would still say it's going to be after the bye week probably. When he comes,
well, there's no
we
point.
Got, what? Yeah,
no
I mean,
point.
We got ECU, Delaware State, and Kansas. We don't really need him for those three
right.
games. We're okay. I mean, it
well,
would have been awesome
no
to have him for Virginia Tech. But.
Right. That's no disrespect. But, even, I mean, look, at the end of the day, too, this is the other thing about the Virginia Tech loss. Has no bearing on how we do in the conference.
Exactly.
We need David Long healthy for conference play. And, you know, we still have nine conference games left to play, and you have to win those games to get to a conference championship to win a conference title. That's how this works now. So, again, that's the other thing is, does it suck to lose Virginia Tech? Yeah, but now it's not as, you know, we don't have the added bonus, I guess, of losing a conference game. So, thanks for your question there, Brian DWVU. Appreciate it. That coming from Twitter at Smoking Musket. Again, you can call in at 917-932-1765. We will listen. We'll answer questions. We'll listen if you just want to vent, whatever you want to do. Mike, I do want to point out, just I want to run through some more stats. I think that it's important to note we had a lot of contribution. I mean, Will Greer was 31 for 53. Now, a lot of those incompletions were in the first half, and he overthrew a lot of guys. I think that his first half numbers were very, very – they weren't indicative of what he can do. And I think a lot of that had to do with maybe him being a little excited, maybe him just not being as in sync with his receivers. But we still managed, you know, that's down to David Sills on that first touchdown. Was the drive was really nice, and that touchdown pass was really great and right where, you know, what you expect from a top level quarterback.
Yeah, it was just the first couple drives. You could tell he was shaking off the rust. And I heard some people behind me, and I think I posted in our Slack chat. There was somebody just like yelling about how Will Greer sucked after like the first two drives. Like, I've got big problems with our fans if we're saying that somebody sucks after two drives, after being out for 2 years. Like, come on. And proved everybody wrong through the rest of
fair.
The game. The second half, Greer was awesome. I mean, every deep ball he threw was just on point.
Well, and that was, I think, the big takeaway from a national media perspective and from even some Virginia Tech fans who I didn't want to talk to, but they talked to me, was that, you know, Will Greer was – he was a difference, and he really was the quarterback that we needed. You know, I think especially when it came to Greer's play, you could tell that he was a little rusty in the first half. I think especially on that very first play of the game or that pass of the game when we went long to Kevin White – or I kept doing that all game too. Caron White, his feet weren't quite underneath him and his body wasn't quite turned the way he needed to be. And so his pass came up a little bit short, and that's why, you know, Caron ended up not catching the ball. Granted, Caron White needs to catch that ball, and we can go into hypotheticals about what happens if he does. But, you know, it wasn't the best setup from Greer. I think that he got a little too eager to throw the ball. Probably noted that he needed to throw the ball quickly, and he just didn't get his feet and his body turned in the best throwing position, get himself the best platform to deliver the ball. But, you know, other than a couple other back foot throws, which he did at Florida a lot, but he's got a cannon for an arm, and he can do that. For the most part, he was on the money when it came to, you know, short to intermediate throws. His deep ball honestly could have been a bit better. And I think that's the one criticism I have throughout the game is his deep ball needs a little bit of touch, a little bit of TLC to drop those in, because some of our wide receivers, we could have had a couple more touchdowns. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, there was the overthrow in the second half. Might have been Jennings. He put way too much on that ball. If you would have put a little under it, that would have fallen right in Jennings or White. I can't remember who it was. That would have fallen right into their hands. But he just overthrew him a little bit.
Yeah, it's one of those things that maybe he'll be able to get through throughout the season. Maybe he'll be able to work through it. I mean, this is why you bring in Jake Spavital to coach him up. Again, you are listening to the Smoking Musket podcast. We are live broadcasting here. You can call the show at 917-932-1765. We will take your calls. We'll answer questions. You can just vent whatever you want to do. Also, reach out to us on Twitter at Smoking Musket, and we will answer your questions there. Some Virginia Tech numbers, though. I mean, look, we knew that we weren't sure what their offense was going to give us, but we knew that they were going to be a pretty balanced offensive attack. I think that they were pretty balanced. Josh Jackson went 15 for 26 for 235 yards and a touchdown. He also had 11 rushes for 101 yards and a touchdown. That was a little disappointing that we weren't able to contain his running game. But quite honestly, the other three running backs weren't terribly effective. Deshaun McLeese, 8 rushes for 51 yards. Stephen Peoples, 13 for 39, and Trayvon McMillan, 9 for 34 and a touch. But, you know, I wasn't blown away with their abilities.
No, I mean, Josh Jackson on the ground was – he hurt us. I mean, what, 101 yards and a touchdown. But I can't tell you one thing that their actual running backs really did. I think there was one good run from –
McMillan had the one run.
Or McMillan.
Yeah, Peoples and McMillan both had a good run, yeah.
I couldn't tell who it was because we'll get off on this later maybe. The PA system at FedEx Field sucks. you couldn't hear anything.
Yeah, it was so not only was it very much a Virginia Tech stadium, the crowd was fine. I mean, it was fairly well split between West Virginia and Virginia Tech fans. Probably a slight edge, a couple thousand maybe to the Virginia Tech side, which, you know, that's fine. But everything else about the game, the setup was pretty much skewed to be basically a Virginia Tech home game. Every graphic, every video, everything was Virginia Tech related. The PA announcer was clearly the Virginia Tech PA announcer, and he was god awful. I don't know how that man is paid by a Division I university to blatantly just miss spots. It was terrible. He had several times where he was calling like fourth and five when it was fourth and one, or fourth and one when it was fourth and five, or down inside of the five when it was inside of the 15 or 10. And it was bad. He was incredibly, sure, he was for Virginia Tech. I get that. I mean, that's what happens when you get apparently the Virginia Tech PA guy. He was just bad. It was absolutely terrible. It was hard to deal with, to be quite honest. It was stupid.
Yeah, he was bad, and Virginia Tech's video packages and stuff are just so corny.
They were so bad.
there was one with Frank Beamer. I don't know what it was trying to, like, promote. It might have been, like, I guess, like, their ticket office or whatever. But, like, Beamer was trying to get into a game as a band member with a tuba.
Yep.
Like, it was just bad. It was so cheesy and so corny. And I sent out a tweet about that, and even the guy from Gobbler Country, who we won't go there. Even he was like, yeah, they're bad. Like, if your own fans are saying they're bad, they're bad. Like, come on.
Well, and this is what I don't
understand.
Maybe
we're just blessed because we have Doug, and Doug is so good at video stuff.
This is true. Duggity
so
dog,
maybe we're just spoiled. Amazing. I don't know.
Well, what does make me mad, too, is we're at a neutral site, supposedly. This is not Virginia Tech's home stadium. This is a neutral site. So where is FedEx Field in all this? And this is why I hope we never play there again. But where were they in all this trying to – I mean, clearly they weren't trying to organize this, and that's annoying. Let's see.
Yeah, everything top to bottom was Virginia Tech.
Yes. We got to mention, for me, the most impact player for Virginia Tech this game was Cam Phillips. He had 7 catches for 138 yards and a touchdown, and he got all up and down on Hakeem Bailey pretty much anytime he wanted to. That was incredibly disheartening to see. I mean, it just seemed like when they needed something, they went to Cam Phillips, and I mean, it worked for him.
Yeah, it felt like it was the same play over and over again.
Yeah.
Like, oh, there goes Cam.
Well,
it's a catch.
Yeah, it was almost like you know, most of the time it was a post route from Cam Phillips going inside of where Hakeem Bailey and, you know, maybe a cover safety would be. And the safety help wasn't always there. If it was, they were still banking on Bailey to make the play, and Phillips just blew right by him most of the time. There were several busted coverages. That needs to be fixed. And that was the part of the defense that concerned me the most. I thought we did a decent job of handling their running game outside of Josh Jackson. They had 234 yards of rushing. Okay, 101 of those were Josh Jackson. It's going to happen. You know what? You're going to give up yards on the ground to running quarterback. Sometimes you've got to learn from it. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine. We didn't really know what we were going to get from them. Okay, whatever. That was not what killed us. What killed us was they were able to move the ball fairly effectively through the air. And that is a little more concerning.
Yeah. I saw a lot of people saying Draymond was ineffective. I mean,
he had
the most
tackles.
Draymond,
I think he had like 8 or 9 tackles on the game. So, I don't know.
I think it's a point of concern going forward, maybe especially against a pass-happy league. But
yeah,
I still think it'll be all right. We'll gel. I think in the end, I think it'll work out.
Well, at the end of the day, I mean, look, 31 points. It could have been worse, especially because our offense was not clicking whatsoever for a lot of – like, there were some drives – we had a lot of three and outs. And that was also concerning because a three and out, especially in the Big 12, is a lot like a punt. You know, you give up field position, which we'll talk about that in a little bit. You give up field position, you give up a possession. It's not great. And you can't you just can't have three and outs. Not in the Big 12. It's not good.
It feels like our three and outs are so quick too. Like we get the ball back and instantly it's done. And that's just the
right
nature of how we play the game. You're right though. Three and out is probably the worst scenario.
Yeah. You'd almost rather, I mean, look, even if it's four and out, you know, you get a first down and then you know, first play, or maybe it's five plays and you punt. That's fine. You move the ball up the field a little bit, give your defense a little bit time to rest, and then, you know, they can get back on the field. Again, you're listening to the You Must Get Live call-in review show. We still haven't had a call from anyone. Please call in 917-932-1765. You can call us. We will answer. We want to try to do these call-in shows after a game, so we'll probably do them either the Sunday or the Monday following our game. So we'll discuss what works best for us. Probably Monday this week. I'm not quite sure. We'll figure it out. But we'll do it after the ECU game. That way we can focus more on interviews and preparing you for the team that we have on the weekend. So tomorrow or Friday we'll have up the ECU preview podcast. We will have some good information for East Carolina. I know I have a little bit of connections there. Most of mine are, you know, fading fast. But you know, I still have a little bit of insight. We will also have Nathan Summers from the Daily Reflector, the newspaper in Greenville, who covers East Carolina football. He is the sports editor there, and he'll join us to discuss East Carolina Pirates and their football team and our you know, our game coming up on Saturday. Another not as important rivalry renewed. Definitely a fun rivalry that we had with East Carolina. I think we have, 14, 15 games all time against them, and they were pretty competitive. It was fun. So look forward to that coming up Friday. But again, back to the Virginia Tech, West Virginia game at Landover, Maryland, FedEx Field. Fortunately, Virginia Tech will continue to hold on to that Black Diamond trophy for another 5 years now. I do think that there were – excuse me. I do think there were some very concerning parts of this game, though. And we talked about some of the secondary play, a little bit about the play calling, and just I think that we went deep a little too much. But then again, they were kind of giving us that. But to me, the biggest concern we had all night, was special teams. And that was the difference in the game. And I understand Virginia Tech missed two field goals. But they were constantly starting above, farther than their own 30 to 35 yard line. Kickoffs, they were getting the ball at the 35. Might as well just kick the ball out of bounds. Punts. I don't know what was wrong with Billy Kenny. He seemed to be, you know, injured almost every other time he punted the ball, but he didn't punt. I think he had an average of like 39 yards. That might be generous. That last touchdown Virginia Tech scored actually direct result of a couple of series of not being able to win the field position battle. Kenny punted the ball. I think he did punt the ball from his end zone. Virginia Tech got the ball on our 45, and they were able to score a touchdown that ultimately led to them winning the game. And you can't have that from a team that wants to compete for a conference title or anything, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the special teams all around is a big, big problem. I mean, even on the return game, like, what do we have to do to be able to return a punt? Like, when was the last time we returned a punt more than -3 yards?
Well, we had -1 return yards this game.
Yeah, like, I just want to see us return a punt for like 10 yards or more at least once. I don't know what that's on.
I would take a punt and get 2 yards Seriously, just catch a ball and okay, darn, it didn't work the way we wanted it to, but we still got 3-5 yards, you know? I think this is still stemming from the whole we weren't able to catch a ball for, 7 years, I felt like. No, I'm kidding. But, you know, we had, 2012, 2013, 2014, where we were plagued by not being able to just field a punt. And I think this is still a holdover from that a little bit. Just catch the ball. Don't do anything special. I don't know. Maybe that's what it is.
I don't know. It just feels like they punt the ball and are instantly in our face, and we don't even have an opportunity. So I don't know if it's a blocking thing. Like if we're selling out and trying to block the punt, and it's leaving us with nobody to block, or it's something that needs addressed, and it's something that has needed addressed, and I don't know who to pin the blame on, because every coach has a hand in special teams. They say Mark Scott is the special teams coordinator or whatever, but he's not the sole coach of special teams. Dana has a hand in on it. Every assistant coach has some part of special teams that they work with. And that's just the way it is. Something needs changed. I don't know if it's strategy or what. It's just been a point. It's been a weak point of ours for a while now.
Yeah,
I don't
know
how to fix it.
It's been the problem. Like I said, I mean, this goes back to maybe 2012, maybe 13. Not quite sure. 13. Definitely 2013, where we were not winning any of the kicking game. We've had decent place kickers in terms of particularly kicking a field goal, but when it came to the punt, I thought Kenny did quite well last year. That was what was so concerning, is that Billy Kenny actually, for the most part, pretty reliable punter. And this year, I don't know what, like I said, he averaged, fewer than 40 yards a punt. That's not good. And looking at Virginia Tech, who their punter is pinning us back in the side of the 20 a lot, he's getting a touchback, so we're starting at the 20. Their kickoff guy is kicking the ball off into the end zone, so we're starting at our own 25. And they're constantly on their side of the 35. Or on our side of the 35, I should say. That's a lot. I mean, that's a lot for your offense to have to deal with.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I don't – maybe Billy Kenny's performance was just like some kind of anomaly. Maybe it's the fact that he was in Maryland. I'm putting a lot of blame on everything that's happened on the fact that we played this game in Maryland.
Absolutely.
It's a terrible place.
I'm sick
because of Maryland.
Yeah, I blame Maryland. Do you have any Maryland stories, call in 917-932-1765. We both have very – much disdain harbored for the state of Maryland, Landover, Maryland, FedEx Field, all of that. If you have anything, because I would love to hear that. You were talking about how you said the athletic department is not trying to play any games there anytime soon.
Yeah, I don't remember who I read it from. It was on Rivals or 24/7. But somebody made a thread about how FedEx Field is just terrible. Traffic getting into the stadium is terrible.
Yep.
How they don't open the tailgate lots till 3:30 and then leave people sitting on the interstate for hours, until the game is about ready to kick off. And somebody, one of the guys from those two sites, posted it and pretty much said that the athletic department kind of feels the same way as the fans. They're not impressed with how FedEx, the people at FedEx Field handled the game and, the game day atmosphere and stuff.
And they shouldn't be. It's a terrible place to play a showcase college football game. And I say that with probably one of the best places. Now, granted, Mercedes-Benz apparently had tons of problems when it came to crowd control getting out of the stadium. But from the Dome and the Mercedes-Benz, when it comes to handling a big game and getting there, getting fans inside, tailgating, all that kind of stuff, they're great. You look at Jerry World, you look at even they had the Louisville Purdue game up in Indianapolis. These are stages that if DC wants to host these games, I mean, FedEx Field is an 82,000 seat stadium. That's as close as you're going to get to some of these college stadium capacities. We only have 68,000 there. Okay. From a from a game day atmosphere standpoint, it's not great. It wasn't great last year for BYU. It was not great at all for James Madison, and I'm still not sure why they played that game there. But you're only getting 68,000 people in. I mean,
well, I think everything, like, as a whole, not even just FedEx, like, everything with the game day atmosphere was kind of a disaster. Like, I have no idea why they would not keep the Metro running for an hour after the game was
yeah.
over. There were so many people that didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many people didn't realize that they were going to get stranded, but they
yep.
still took the Metro in. And actually, after the game, I was walking back. I parked in the Metro parking lot because I have, you know, friends in the D.C. area, and they gave me the heads up where to park and everything. So I'm walking back to my vehicle, and I guess at this point I was just so tired of being in Maryland that I didn't really care what happened. So I'm walking back, and as I'm getting to the parking lot, two Virginia Tech fans are coming towards me. I guess they rode the Metro in and were stranded. So they asked if they could get a ride. And without thinking, I was like, yeah, sure, I'll give you a ride. I asked where they were going. It's just a couple miles up the road. But then when I got in the vehicle, I was like, this is how I die. Like, these guys can kill me right now.
Yeah.
But I don't care because I just want to get out of Maryland. But they were actually really cool. So if those guys, I actually told them about the musket. They said they'd check it out. They were actually really cool. So if those guys are listening, thanks for not killing me.
I'm glad you did not pick up. You were not killed by the two random people you picked up.
Yeah, yeah. But
well,
it
was bad.
Poor planning. Yeah, poor planning all around.
Well, and also, and I know a lot of other big stadiums are built out in the suburbs or whatever, but it's not easy to get to. It's not in a great place to be around. I mean, Landover is not a great place. I mean, it's just not. Capitol Heights, whatever you want to call it, they're not. It's not a great location. You know, it. I don't know. I wasn't at the game in Baltimore. I don't know if it was better or worse. I don't know where else you play a neutral site game like this in our area. The only other place I could think of would be, you know, Heinz Field in Pittsburgh, but that's technically a team's home field.
Right.
You could play in Philly,
I mean,
maybe.
We're gonna play in Charlotte next year.
Charlotte's fine. I've been in that stadium. It's a fine stadium. It's fine.
Yeah.
Charlotte is.
I just hope they handle the game day situation better.
Well, they had the South Carolina NC State game this year. They've had other games there. They host the bowl game there seasonally. They host the ACC championship game. So they are accustomed
right.
to having dedicated college football fan bases there. I think goes along. I think that's the problem is that, you know, you've got Redskins fans who, unfortunately, I don't know how you do it. I just don't. I don't know why or how you would go to a game there.
No, like, for Redskins games, do they wait and open the tailgating lots, like, three
yeah,
hours
that,
before
well,
the game
kicks
off? Well,
that's an NFL policy is it's 4 to 5 hours before the game kicks off. That's
oh,
an NFL
so
policy.
Bad.
So, yeah, the NFL's stupid. We know this. They're the no fun league. But still, like, you would think that traffic getting into the lots wouldn't be as bad. And I think that's the problem is that, I mean, when I go to Falcons games around here, it's easy to get in and out of the parking lot. It's not easy to get in. For some reason, it's never been easy to get in and out of FedEx Field parking lots. I don't know. Been there 2 years in a row, and both times have been terrible. One game we lost, one game we won. It doesn't matter. They were both terrible. You know, the stadium isn't great. We did Saturday night when we were going into the city for the alumni party. We've passed RFK, and it looked like it was about to fall down. Like, the fact that thing
yeah,
is, so thin is amazing.
As I was driving the two Virginia Tech fans back to their car, we passed RFK, and it looks like a dump.
it's terrible. You could
such
me outside
a bad need of a
off.
Good stadium there.
Yeah. Maybe, I don't know, D.C. is getting, they haven't, from all I can tell, the baseball stadium is really pretty. They're getting a new soccer stadium next year in the city. I don't know, maybe it'll get better for the football team, but apparently Dan Snyder wants them to build a new stadium and no one wants to pay for it. So we've got about 8 minutes left here on our live call-in show to review the Virginia Tech-West Virginia game. If you want to call in, give us a shout at 917-932-1765. You can also ask us questions on Twitter, at Smoking Musket. I don't want to talk about too much looking forward because this is a review show, but this is the unfortunate part, and I think this is – we found out the AP polls today, and unsurprisingly, West Virginia dropped out of the top 25. I had no qualms with that. You know, you lose your opening game, and you're at 20 or whatever. You're going to drop out. Notre Dame being in is another story, but whatever. The problem is you have three games against teams that aren't really going to give you street cred to get back into that top 25. You know? So you've got
it's
Carolina, Delaware State, Kansas. Kansas will be the best of those three. Kansas could be undefeated by the time we play them. But you're still going to get pollsters to look at and go, well, who has Kansas played? And to be quite fair, they won't have played anybody up to that point either. So, you know.
And I think if we stand a chance to get back into the polls, it's going to take some of those ranked teams ahead of us to just fall out. Like, I'm looking at Florida. Florida needs to fall out. I don't know who they play this week or if they're playing this week against the hurricane. Let me look now. But, like, I don't even think they should have been ranked this week.
No, I don't think so either. They looked putrid. They looked absolutely terrible against Michigan. And Michigan looked good, but they didn't look that good. Florida was bad. They have no offense whatsoever.
Okay, so Florida plays Northern Colorado. So that'll be another win, and somehow they'll jump up a couple spots in the polls.
Right.
But then they have Tennessee on the 16th, and both of those teams are ranked. Somebody's going to have to lose, so maybe we'll be knocking on the door around that time, I think, after the Delaware State game, because we're still in the 26, 28
range. Well, yeah, and Notre Dame plays Georgia this week, and as much as I dislike UGA and everyone knows that, I definitely can see Georgia going up to the South and beating Notre Dame. I mean, that would not shock me whatsoever. That could knock Notre Dame out. Granted, Notre Dame will always be close at the top 25 just because they're Notre Dame, despite the fact that they went 4-8 last year. But, you know, that's just just how it works. I mean, that to me is the part that I don't want to say it sucks because, you know, it happens, but it sucks because it's going to be hard to get back into the top 25 the rest of the year. We're going to have to beat TCU and Texas Tech to even get a sniff. So that's the part that concerns me. I mean, TCU is in the top 25. I don't think they should drop. I don't think they have a reason to drop in the next couple of weeks, but you know, if they're ranked and then we are able to beat them or whatever, it's going to be hard to get back to that top 25. And that's what concerns
before
me.
We play TCU plays at Arkansas.
Yeah.
And then they play Southern Methodist and then they play Oklahoma State before us.
Right.
I don't feel like they're going to be in the top 25 because I'm pretty sure Oklahoma State's going to beat them.
Yeah, I mean, they could easily lose to Arkansas this year at Arkansas.
Right.
Granted,
and with the way college football started off, it wouldn't surprise me if SMU beat them. I mean, Baylor lost to Liberty, for God's sake.
See, at the end of the day, we didn't lose to Liberty. And we didn't lose to Maryland. So.
Right. Texas is back.
Of course. The fact that Texas is ranked number 23 to start this, that shows that the pundits they put so much stock into names. And I mean that by the name of Texas, the name Tom Herman, they put so much stock into this. And it was like, clearly they're not back. They're not as good as you want them to be.
No, I hope Justin Crawford and Kennedy McCoy and Martell Petaway are just licking their chops watching highlights of that Texas game. Because I feel like they're going to have just an awesome day.
Well, we'll see. So, like I said, we're taking calls still. You know, we've got 5 minutes left. You want to tweet us at Smoking Musket, you can do that. Ask questions. Call the show, 917-932-1765. we'll still take you, but we got about three and a half minutes left, according to my countdown timer. So, you know, just last couple thoughts. I think we hit on it, but this was not a neutral site game. I'm very ashamed in our athletic department for scheduling this as a neutral site game when it clearly was not. The graphics were all from Virginia Tech. I mean, literally it said, get loud VT, make Lane rock, and stuff like that. They played Enter Sandman three or four times after the opener, after the entrance. They played that damn turkey gobble throughout the entire second half. That's not what – you don't get that on a neutral site game. I'm sorry, you just don't. And that's unprofessional from FedEx Field and that staff. It looks bad on West Virginia because we got tricked into thinking this was going to be a neutral site game when clearly it wasn't. We got hosed by several calls from the referees. But that was not the reason we lost. Granted, I don't know how you call pass interference when the ball lands past the bench, but whatever. Nothing went right for us that we needed to go right, and that didn't help us, you know?
Yeah. Real quick question. You were at the BYU game last year, right?
Yep.
Okay. Did we have West Virginia graphics and stuff up?
We did, but I don't remember it being all West Virginia. Now, granted, that might be because it's, you know, kind of one of those, well, it seems normal to me. But
right.
I don't remember it being all West Virginia. I don't really remember that. So I'm trying to remember. So if someone else knows that, please let us know, because I'm not entirely sure. But we were the home team, and I can, you know, like literally that it seemed like that was a game that we were playing. We were hosting them, but we just happened to play in FedEx. I don't know. I don't know how these deals went down. It's one of those things where it's like, okay, you have two teams and two fan bases from states that join that border each other, playing in a state that borders. Look, Florida State and Alabama just did the same damn thing, you know. They played in Atlanta at a neutral site field. I didn't. That was neutral, you know. Why couldn't we have played a true neutral site game? The fact that the Redskins logo was still on the field was so Bush League too. This is just all bad.
Did you notice? I don't know if you were in the stadium early enough. Like, they had the Redskins logo like roped off where nobody could go near it for like the longest time before the game started.
That's funny. That's really funny.
Like, I didn't understand the point in that, because then they took it down, and I mean, we were going to run all over it anyway. So what's it? I don't know.
I don't know either. What I do know is West Virginia's now 0-1 to start the 2017 season. You know, Dana said this feels a lot like the Alabama loss. Obviously, it hurt a little bit more because we lost to a rival, but I understand his thought process. I didn't feel like it was that bad, but we'll talk about this on our show on Friday. We will preview the East Carolina game. Thanks for listening to this live broadcast of the Smoking Musket podcast. For Mike Miller, I am Bart Keeler. And like I said, we'll be back on Friday to preview the East Carolina game. So, thanks for listening to the Smoking Musket podcast. And as always, bye, buddy. Smoking Musket, Dad. All right, no longer. I think I may have mischimed that.